I'm speaking today with Veen Nguyen, who is running for state representative in House District 26, Fort Bend County. V, first question I'd like to ask, why are you running for this office?
Why am I running? Three good reasons. One, I have a personal vested interest in the district. I'm a working mom. I have a young son who attends public school in Fort Bend ISD. He's going to be a fifth grader, so that's one of the reasons, one of my reasons for having a vested interest in the district, because I want to see him grow and be a product of Fort Bend County. I'm also a small business owner and a practicing attorney. I practice in Fort Bend County, so that's another second reason why I choose to be vested in that district. Second big reason, besides the personal vested interest, I want to bring balance to the Texas legislature. And the last reason would be that I want to be a voice for HD 26, a voice that HD 26 has never had before.
Okay. Tell me a little bit about yourself, your background both professionally and in politics.
Okay. Well, I'm 34 years old. I'm a small business owner. I am Vietnamese American, born outside of Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. I am a working mom, an adjunct professor at Thurgood Marshall School of Law, a Center for Advanced Legal Studies, and I'll be teaching at the University of St. Thomas. I taught legal research and writing. I'm also a community advocate for battered women and children in my community.
And in politics?
In politics. Well, this is my first run. It was a great opportunity that I wanted to take upon, that I had this journey to be able to be a public servant. Being a lawyer for the community and working with indigent women and children, different types of clients with all various socioeconomic backgrounds, that I want to be able to represent my community as a public servant on a wider platform. So this is the chose an office that would allow me to achieve those goals.
Okay. This district represented for a long time by Charlie Howard. It's a very different, the neighborhoods, the area is very different than when he was first elected to office.
Mm-hmm.
Talk to me a little bit about what this district, is, what it looks like, and what you think its priorities are that you would advocate for as a state representative.
So to describe the district itself, the changing demographics of the district, it's a minority-majority district. Some don't know that, but it's proud to say that it is a beautifully diverse district, one of the most diverse districts in the state. It has a 30% Asian population, 17% African-American, and 17% Latino. It has historically been a conservative district, but I think that it growing demographically, culturally, that I feel that this is going to be a different time. The moods are changing. The political mood is shifting. And this is why I chose to run for this district and giving the community an opportunity to choose a candidate of their choice.
What do you see as the priorities for this district?
Public education will be the, I feel, is the number one value or issue in the district.
I mean, Fort Bend is known for having good schools. A lot of people mm-hmm. have moved there for it. What do you think the effects were of the $5.4 billion cut to public education from the 2011 session, and what do you want to do to try and reverse that?
Fort Bend County boasts one of the best school districts. That was the reason why I chose to raise my son there and have him attend school in Fort Bend ISD. He's an honor roll student, student council member. I mean, the student body is completely diverse. I mean, it's a great school district and great teachers. So, of course, when the budget cuts from the last legislative session occurred with the $5.4 billion in cuts, mass teacher layoffs, increased class sizes, cuts in services that would help struggling students pass standardized test scores, all of that, just you feel that it's very very palpable, the disappointment of these budget cuts. And when elected a state representative, I would want to be able to fight for those school children and for our educators and our support staff and making sure that we properly fund the public education system out in Fort Bend and make sure that it stays at its, improve its status now, go back to the former glory that everybody knew it to be one of the best school districts in the state. I mean, this is the reason why people moved out to Fort Bend County, particularly HD 26, because that's the first thing you think about is, you know, you want to have your children go to a school to see them grow and become, you know, in the end, become active members of the working community. And for working parents as myself, I mean, that gives me that peace of mind to hear that my son is thriving and being taught by bright teachers. And so I want to make sure I fight for the school children, for the parents, for the teachers, for the school district, all around. Yeah.
I mean, we can't really talk about this without talking about revenue. I mean, as you know, in 2006, as a result of the
unfunded
last school finance lawsuit, legislature implemented a 50-cent property tax cut, one-third of the amount that had been charged or allowed to be imposed. They created, you know, the business margins tax. They increased the cigarette tax and some other things to make up for the revenue that was lost to that. But we knew from the beginning, and it has proven, that has fallen short every biennium by several billion dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So what do we need to do to bring in the revenue that is needed to, you know, pay for the property tax cut that they passed in 2006?
I think that's going to be a very daunting challenge in the next session, talking about the budget and looking at where the root of the problem, where it all began. And like you had stated, in 2006, when they had passed the property tax cut, which was unfunded, and of course, then that just what began the snowball effect. And then looking at the structure, we need to figure out how to bring in new revenue. Because it's all relative. We bring in new revenue, it helps us adequately fund vital public services, public education, and public health, and all the other essential vital public services that we need. I think that we need to figure out new revenue in that. One good way would be to, well, as a short-term solution for public education, would be tapping into the rainy day fund. That would be one. And making sure that we maintain our vital public services by tapping into that. Long-term, new revenue, but also eliminating tax loopholes or eliminating unproductive tax exemptions that just doesn't benefit anybody. But being able to impose equitable taxes that would not overly burden working families, small business owners like myself, and making sure that it's just equitable across the board. I mean, we know that taxes is essential part of the budget, but just we need to make sure that we're imposing taxes that are beneficial and make sense.
Okay. Healthcare, Medicaid, another big component of the budget. In fact, the last legislature didn't fund two full years' worth of Medicaid, and a fair amount of what's in the rainy day fund now is already likely to pay for what they didn't fund last time. Texas has the option of expanding Medicaid under the Affordable Care Act. Governor Perry has said that we won't do that.
Right.
So first of all, let's talk about what do you think the effect of that will be for Texas to not expand Medicaid? What's the case for expanding it?
I guess to start with, when you think about that issue of health care, I mean, we already have a very backwards health care model as it is now. I mean, we have an uninsured population that's costing us at least $6.5 billion a year for, you know, having to take care of the uninsured population. But so to start from the beginning, I mean, we see the uninsured population is having to go to the emergency room for services it's backwards. I mean, that affects everybody, hospitals, healthcare professions, the uninsured, even people as ourselves who pay for insurance premiums. I mean, the insurance companies are going to keep hiking up the premiums because it's affecting everybody in the system. But so when you think of Medicaid, I mean, to me, it's a program that, I mean, if the federal government is willing to give us $9 to 1 every dollar, right, then why would we not want to consider that plan? I mean, it's going to be fully funded at 100% for the first 3 years, after which then it would be just 10% for the state to chip in. I think that until there's a better offer on the table, this is the Affordable Care Act makes the most sense to ensure that we can, everybody's best interest is served, and we have to make sure we have a program in place fully funded by the federal government for the first 3 years, and let's go with that plan. That's what I think is best.
I mean, part of Medicaid is also the Women's Health Program, which, you know, is subject of some controversy because of the state's decision to exclude Planned Parenthood from that. There's ongoing litigation. In fact, there was just the injunction against the state removing those funds was just lifted.
Yes.
You know, there's a story in The Observer recently about a whole bunch of clinics not even affiliated with Planned Parenthood that have gone under as a result of this.
Yes.
What, you know, what's going on with this? What's going on with this? What do we need to do here?
I think it's appalling how the GOP has tried to, you know, attack women's reproductive rights. I mean, I'm, as a working mother, you know, I'm a single parent. I'm a business owner. I mean, I feel like that family planning services that Planned Parenthood provides is essential for me. I want to be able to make that decision as to when I'm ready to continue, you know, when I want to increase or, you know, expand my family while I'm balancing, you know, my career and motherhood. So I don't feel like that's right for the government, for the GOP to impose legislation on women that that I feel like that there's no place for that. And I don't feel like that my opponent can truly empathize or understand what a woman needs. And I think that Planned Parenthood has provided services to women across the state, and, you know, not just providing, I mean, they provide an array of services, I mean, family planning services, contraceptives, breast cancer screenings, cervical screenings, diabetes screenings, and the list goes on. But not only does it service women, but it also services men and working families. So I think that's where the GOP is wrong. The Republicans are wrong, and Governor Perry is short-sighted in trying to get rid of Planned Parenthood that way. Does it make sense? I think that we need to make sure that the WHP, or Women's Health Program, as you call it, stays in place because they are one of the largest healthcare providers in the state.
Okay. One issue that was brought up, didn't get passed in 2011, but appears to be a front burner issue again, is the so-called sanctuary cities.
Yes.
Something where the state is effectively requiring cities to enforce federal immigration laws. What's your, this is often identified as a Latino issue.
Right.
But there's a large immigrant community, a large Asian immigrant community, is there not? I mean, what's your view on sanctuary cities?
You know, when you think about, when I think of immigration, being a lawyer, I practice immigration law too, and, you know, Gordon Kwan being one of my mentors, that I feel like the immigration issue and sanctuary cities and the whole voter legislation ID that they were trying to come up with to, you know, disenfranchise voters and particularly the Latino community, the African American community, I take a very personal stance in it that my family is, you know, immigrated here from Vietnam at the fall of Saigon. And so, of course, right away, I don't have this very hardcore, you know, a devoid feeling about immigrants. I think that they have, if you've come here and you've come here legally, then you should be able to, you have your rights. I mean, of course, there is the issue about illegal immigrants and how do we handle that, but I think that should be left up to the federal government. I think sanctuary cities, I feel that voter ID, voter legislation that tries to disenfranchise illegal immigrants from voting is wrong. So I think that's a very sensitive issue, but an issue that should be left to the federal government.
Okay. Redistricting, of course, was a big deal in this past session, as it is every 10 years. The district that you're in, 26, it's different from what it was when Charlie Howard was there. Mm-hmm. It was drawn in a way that kind of sliced and diced a lot of the neighborhoods. The first interim map that the San Antonio court drew, drew something a lot more compact that was also, you know, kind of competitive, 50-50, Republican-Democrat.
Right.
What's under the current map is both, as I said, restored to be both a lot more discontinuous and, you know, not balanced in a partisan fashion. You know, what's your view of what was done with this district and, you know, what do you think should be done with it as the litigation comes to its eventual conclusion?
The redistricting battle was a very, very interesting experience because I was there from the beginning, from August, and then when the maps came out, when they were drawn, and that map was completely different than the way that the map looks now. it is very interesting how the maps were, in my opinion, were intentionally gerrymandered to prevent a particular type of candidate or preventing a community such as the Asian community from being able to choose a candidate or, I'm sorry, elected candidate of their choice. And it was, I mean, the allegations that they fragmented, fractured, you know, through the Asian communities to, you know, basically to dilute that vote, dilute, you know, the Asian vote. But, you know, even after the U.S. Supreme Court stay, and of course that was a huge setback, you know, when all that came out, and I had to decide whether, you know, am I going to still go for it? It went from the interim 50-50 map to a completely different looking map, the way that it's described. As you described it, I think you described it as a snowflake-shaped map. And, you know, at that time, I got, you know, asked my mentors and my constituents and or my, you know, the supporters that I had that wanted me to run, future constituents, future voters, that, you know, should I run or should I not? And my heart was still in it. And after we looked at the data, it still showed that this district is a minority-majority district. It is 30% Asian, Vietnamese community, Chinese community, South Asian, Pakistani, Filipino community. And as a whole, I mean, it could be a very... If we get that Asian bloc, and we... Public education would be that common value amongst that the Asian community, that we could vote as a coalition, and we could build that coalition in that district. That was the reason why I decided to still run even after the map came out the way it did. And I don't regret it. And during the block walks that we've been doing, it's been very inspiring. And it's been a very receptive experience. And hearing them tell me that I'm so glad that you still decided to move forward and you know, and to do this, that's inspiring. I feel like that the district needs to truly reflect the growing diversity and changing demographics. It is growing, and it's still going to keep growing. I mean, the district has three beautiful, large mosques in my district. I mean, that's three, you know, a large Muslim community along with many other culturally diverse institutions as well. And when you go to the different functions out there in HD 26, it's just this type of, it has this aura, this diverse harmony to it, that if you didn't go to HD 20, or, you know, go to Sugar Land or go to that whole area, which to go back, I know that I need to describe the map itself. HD 26 is Sugar Land proper, parts of Richmond and Mission Bend. Mission Bend is different from the Sugar Land proper area. I mean, they have, you know, there's the different schools, of course, and different, I guess how you would call it, a socioeconomic background is different. But overall, block walking through the district, I know that the common value amongst the district is public education and this type of, they want to be included. Everybody wants to be included in the district, and that's what I want to do. As state representative, I want to make sure I reach out to every corner of the district and I understand what is important to all of them and to be their voice across the board and be able to walk in their shoes and adequately listen to what is important to them. And so that's what I'm hoping, that, you know, this cycle and every cycle from this point forward will, that when you look at the map, even though it looks like a snowflake map, but that it's a map that is culturally diverse.
Okay. Yeah. A lot of legislation that actually gets through in a given session tends to be of strictly local interest, something that's specific to a city or a MUD or a county or whatever. Are there any items like that that you are aware of that you would be that you would attempt to move through the legislature if you were elected?
I know that. So you're talking about certain MUD issues.
Well, I mean, not MUD. I mean, just something strictly local. I mean, you know, MUD,
strictly
tourism,
local,
whatever.
I have heard that. I mean, and I've been hearing from my, you know, from when I go on these listening tours and talking to voters. What else is important to you? Public education, small business owners, creating jobs, healthcare, and they've stated water is an issue, infrastructure is an issue, overall, I think that they just want to be able to create more parks is what I'm hearing. Parks, you know, more aesthetic type places where, you know, everybody can come and just, you know, we have strong family values out there, and we just want to be able to all, you know, celebrate our time with our families. I think that's important. So I think also it's important is that because of the fact that we're so culturally diverse, we need to figure out ways to bring awareness to help break stereotypes or misconceptions about other types of cultural, ethnic groups. That way we can all live amongst each other, you know, with a type of appreciation for each other. That is what I've heard.
And when people go to vote in this election in November, when time comes, why should they vote to make you the next representative in District 26 and not your opponent?
I am very proud to be part of a U.S. military family. I'm proud to be part of a family that's has strong values and character. Being an attorney, I went to the University of Houston for my undergrad. I went to Thurgood Marshall and graduated with honors with my law degree. I'm raising a small child at the time. I'm adjunct professor. I teach legal research and writing. So I strongly believe that my experience as an attorney, as a small business owner, a parent, a minority, that I feel like that will all transcend seamlessly into my role as a state legislator because of the fact that my educational background, I know how to read, write, and interpret the legislation. As a parent, I believe I can fight for our students, our school children. And as a product of higher education, I want to make sure that after the kids graduate, that they have an easier access to higher education. That's another important value amongst the groups, the community in HD 26. They want to make sure that their kids go off to the school, universities that they want to go to and come back if they want to go back to Fort Bend County and continue the legacy there. So I believe that with all of that, all the roles that I have played, I believe that I would be a strong, resonating voice in Austin for my community. I know that people have stated, or at least my opponent has stated, that my age, because of my age, I am younger than him, and he believes he's more of a leader than I am because he's older. I disagree. I believe that being 34 years old and having all that I have and proudly worked for, I would continue that determination when I'm there in Austin.
So. Okay. Nguyen, thank you very much for talking to me today.
Thank you.